celebrating our diversity and joined by a quest for truth, we work for peace and honor all creation. This is our covenant.
At this time, we invite our children to proceed upstairs for supervised activities. As they leave, please stand or remain standing and let us sing hymn number 352, Find a Stillness. Our child care providers will meet the children at the rear of the sanctuary. Please be seated. If you are proud of this church, become its advocate. If you are concerned for its future, share its message. This church cannot survive without your faith, your confidence, and your enthusiasm. Its destiny, the larger hope, rests in your hands. The morning offering will now be gratefully received. Thank you, Amber. We give thanks for your generosity, not only for this offering, but also for your gifts. Gifts of your time, gifts of your talent, and not least the gifts of your ongoing financial support. Gifts which together sustain the fellowship and bless the world.
The reading comes from Beyond Idolatry, an essay by F. Forrester Church. Some people hold that anything which is not rational is irrational and therefore to be rejected. But reason suggests that beyond the rational lies a trans-rational realm. We enter it in our dreams. We enter it in moments of worship. We enter it singing, when the tunes are good, even if the words are not. We enter it in lovemaking and dancing and stargazing. We break through to a transrational realm beyond knowing or naming. Please remain seated while we sing hymn number 286, A Core of Silence. Good morning, everybody. I'm so pleased to be with you today to share a little of my understanding of sacred space, which transcends time and space, a place where two worlds flow into one another, the visible with the invisible, where the finite touches the infinite, where we follow our imagination as it travels through the many subtle layers of consciousness. Our state of mind informs our reality. And isn't it wonderful to find ourselves in a state of renewal and deep psychic refreshment after prayer, meditation, or entering a space that resonates within us? I recall the impact of what I called a special place, even as a young child. How I tiptoed when I entered an old church, or a concert hall, or a ruined abbey. I instinctively felt the need to speak softly, to allow my eyes to rove across every niche, to tune my ears to the slightest sound, while being aware of a growing sense of awe. The old church, blessed and consecrated for worship, with its soaring nave, candle-lit apses, and impressive altar, seemed truly the place to meet the divine. The concert hall, echoing when empty, but later resounding with glorious music, also inspired that same heart swell, accompanied by a feeling that I ought to be good. The ruins of Kirkstall Abbey in Yorkshire, England, sacked during the reign of Henry VIII under his dissolution of the monastery's decree, were my early introduction to pantheism. Nature has overtaken the site of the deconsecrated abbey, although some of its stone walls still stand, and breaths of its former glory remained, a ruined wall rising starkly against the sky, a flowering shrub at its base on which might briefly rest a butterfly, accompanied by the soft notes of a droning bee. In the last stanza of William Wordsworth's famous poem about daffodils, "When oft upon my couch I lie, in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye which is the bliss of solitude," he wrote about the hallowed relationship between nature and spirit, and I am persuaded. Wordsworth, in his poems and beautiful prose, inhabited so often the world of imagination, what the Greeks called kairos, dream time, as opposed to chronos, clock time. Through kairos, I suggest we are all able to access the invisible, the infinite, the transcendent, the awe-inspiring, for a little while at times. It is a wonderful, organic, human experience of the creative, constructive, and intuitive faculties of the mind. Another ancient Greek definition of imagination is phantasia, fantasy, that we link with superstition and magical thinking. Over the centuries, it has often seemed that the two concepts, kairos and phantasia, have become conflated, when in fact, they are separate and quite different. One summer, a husband and his wife stayed for a while in the campground my husband and I operated for several years. They sat outside their RV in companionable silence or roamed the grounds together holding hands. In fact, they remained longer than they originally intended because they believed the surrounding woodland was enchanted, a happy place, a haven for fairies. They observed tiny faces peering over the boughs of trees, smiling through the leaves, and peeking under the ancient roots. This couple was also very conversant about nature, particularly wild plants and flowers. They made their own oils and unguents from rosemary and lavender, and they were altogether charming and generous in sharing the lore they claimed as their own. I confess that when I was with them, I longed to find an elf under the mushrooms growing in the dank, moist earth. Although it may surprise you that I never glimpsed one of the little folk, I did thoroughly enjoy the feeling of innocence and anticipation for a while, fantasia, along with a rush of benevolence that filled my heart. But wait, there's more. One morning, as I began to do my chores, they rushed over and asked me what was wrong. I was surprised, as I did not think my demeanor revealed how furious I was that a late arriving RV guest, after using all our facilities, ignored our honor system and took off without paying. So I told them what had happened. "We knew it," they exclaimed. "The little folk have been upset for the last couple of hours, but we couldn't fathom why." But what about experiencing a feeling of awe in more lowly places? I had heard about cloistered nuns who believed that the most menial tasks were sacred because they were offered to God. I sometimes thought about that when I was cleaning toilets in the campground. But I could never get myself into a contemplative state of mind. The noise of faucets being turned on and off, the flushing of the toilets, the sound of the mop as I splashed it in the bucket did not nudge me onto a higher plane. These were chores to be finished as quickly as possible in Chronos time, actually watching the clock. Not only that, I resented the campers who came in right afterwards to use my newly scoured facilities, leaving soap scum in the sinks and muddy footprints on the floor. So much for my feeling that I ought to be good. However, various places and experiences over the years have filled me with both reverence and joy, and I am open to the idea that the most unremarkable areas can evoke very deep feelings, even though the communal bathroom was a stretch for me. For example, Robben Island. Robben is a Dutch word for sealed. The notorious prison in South Africa that housed Nelson Mandela for so many years is now, I believe, sacred. A place where the finite world meets the infinite. His faith in his anti-apartheid cause, his love for humanity, his later non-violent stance, and his courage during years of injustice, torture, and imprisonment became the essence of this good man. And it surely remains there. It either dwells in the air of the compound or is perhaps unconsciously imprinted on our minds when we visit the site. Does it matter which? Because of her interest in sacred space, the Reverend Dr. Lauren Artress of Grace Cathedral in San Francisco reintroduced the ancient concept of the labyrinth to the United States many years ago, following a visit to Chartres Cathedral in France. She suggests that our collective unconscious, a concept described by Carl Jung, probably created it, because the labyrinth is found in almost every religious tradition around the world. It is filled with mystery because we don't know the origin of its design. But we do know that journeying through the labyrinth can be a tremendous help in quieting the mind, because the body is moving, even as we are aspiring to think or meditate. Movement takes away the excess charge of psychic energy that disturbs our efforts to calm our thought processes. For that reason, I have heard walking the labyrinth described as a body prayer. With movement, we are stabilized, and the monkey chatter in our brain calms down. Dr. Artress believes that labyrinths are divine imprints, allowing two worlds, the visible and the invisible, to flow into one another, thus becoming powerful tools for transformation. I have walked the labyrinth many times during the past 10 years and found solace and heart's ease. A space in Fairhaven Park has been claimed as such a container for the sacred, and it is available daily for personal spiritual journeys. And Flowering Cherry Sangha Buddhist Mindfulness Meditation, held here at Buff, incorporates walking meditation as well as seated meditation. I now think of my little house as a container for the sacred. The window seat overlooking the forest in Southern Valley, built so lovingly for me by my husband, lends itself to meditation, tender thoughts, and yes, comfort in difficult moments. In some moods, my little dog Bertie's trusting, sleeping body between my knees becomes a beloved icon. The old Narthex entrance on I Street, with its drab walls and carpet, seems an unlikely spot in comparison with this beautiful sanctuary to be a sacred space. Yet, in the past few months, unhappy, worried, desperate people, following their hopeful hearts, come through that doorway, seeking a little emergency monetary assistance and a safe place to talk about the difficulties they are currently facing in their lives. Buffsters, who make up the Humanitas team, are there to listen carefully and to offer help and information about further resources available in Bellingham. When the people depart, their shoulders are a little straighter, not only because assistance has been offered, but also because they feel that most of us here at Buff do give a damn. We offer the following Buddhist blessing as they depart. May you be peaceful, happy, and well, and may no harm come to you. The atmosphere created in this space by Buff's very own alms ministry truly feels consecrated every Wednesday morning, beginning with the Humanitas team sharing a centering prayer before the clients come in and ending with a benediction afterwards. It has become a source of spiritual strength. Thanks to the generosity of friends and our dear congregation in beloved community, Humanitas has been able to offer these services as part of our shared spiritual journey. Thus, this unlikely space has a meaning that is deeply personal and satisfying for the members of this ministry. Some time ago, I heard someone wonder if religion is for those who are scared to death of hell, and spirituality is for those who have been there. Although we often have a different sense of the holy than that is offered in many churches today, I do agree that not only spaces, but certain times of the year also lend themselves to deeper contemplation. As part of our collective unconscious, pagan themes of darkness and light emerge in our psyche over and over again. But for many of us, they are accompanied by Christian narratives. At Easter, for example, the old redemption story and its accompanying rituals, which overlay even more ancient tales, allow us to embrace death of self, seasons, loved ones, either within a religious movement or not, but always with a sense of hope. Winter is nearly over, spring is on the horizon. We are aware that darkness can hover at any time of the year, but it is a comfort to be able to ritualize it or speak it out loud as a sacrament. As I have aged, I've learned to move towards sadness when it comes upon me. I no longer flee from despair, but like Persephone, I now allow myself to explore its depths at times. Persephone was initially forcibly dragged down by Hades into the underworld before she agreed to descend unaccompanied once a year. Meeting face to face with fear or regret or anxiety or grief is far from pleasant. But it's in this dark place that I have often absorbed the emotional lessons that life has had in store for me. By greeting them, I am able to rise up again, a little wiser, I hope, and filled with gratitude, aware of the naturalness of the yin and yang of life. In such a contemplative mood, sometimes in a tearful state, and often in my window seat, I am reminded of a Sufi verse that says, "When the heart weeps for what it has lost, the soul rejoices for what it has found." Within this paradox, I suggest that in our flight to the rational, chronos time, we often forget that there are many subtle layers of consciousness we can reach to our benefit through solitude and quiet, meditation and prayer in Kairos time. Carl Jung also reminds us that access to the divine comes from deep within our core being. Maya Angelou understood this. On May 23rd, a few days before she died, she tweeted, "Listen to yourself, and in that quietude, you may hear the voice of God." I don't really know if I've ever experienced the divine, or if I'd recognize it if I did. But I have come close to the emergence of my imaginative, intuitive self in places other than an old church, a concert hall, or a ruined abbey. I've also experienced a spiritual renewal in the presence of loved ones and in the bittersweet silence of the memories of them. The sacred waits to be discovered in the most unlikely of spaces. We simply need to be. So now, let us simply be as Amber plays Debussy's Clair de Lune.
Thank you.
Please stand as you are able and join in singing our closing hymn, number 391, Voice Still and Small. May you discover your own sacred space.